There are two important physical changes taking place. The first one is the warming itself of the ocean, increase of the temperatures of the water column. And the other one is the ice melting processes in high latitudes. The combination of these two processes have changes in the distribution of resources. So particular species that have an affinity for particular windows of temperature moving with the temperature of the water to different places. This is the first problem. The second problem is that the ice melting is interacting with this and changing some circulation patterns. And so when circulation changes, that affects the productivity of the oceans.
What challenges are there for those trying to push the global ocean agenda among so many other climate-related issues right now?
Well, I'll say that prior to the COP21 meeting in Paris last year, the role of the oceans in climate change was poorly understood and not sufficiently appreciated. That changed dramatically in Paris, and the reason for that was, first, a very determined campaign to raise awareness on the plight of the oceans. The problem of recognition of the oceans in the concept or in the problem of climate change has to do with the fact that we have a number of multiple stresses playing up in the oceans. There's issues of overexploitation of resources, issues of pollutions, multiple uses of the marine environment. And so in that narrative, the concept of climate change tends to be downgraded to a second level of importance. And as I said, this is changing rapidly.
How are governments responding to these issues, in your opinion?
Well, as I mentioned, there was this dramatic change in COP21 that essentially meant that in COP21, countries arrived with what they called intended national determined contributions. So in other words, the intended contributions of the different countries to reduce, to mitigate, and to adapt to climate change. After Paris COP21, those intended contributions became nationally determined contributions. In other words, they were pledges. They became from an intention to a pledge. And we know of at least 60 countries that have listed fisheries and agriculture as part of the national determined contributions. That shows a political will to include the oceans as part of the adaptation and mitigation responses. And the one way of seeing how much the narrative has changed is to recognize that in COP22, we have for the first time an Oceans Action Day. We have had Oceans Day in the past, in previous COPs, but we're not part of the official so-called Blue Zone agenda or the action agenda. So now we have a number of countries generating vulnerability assessments of the marine industries to climate change, developing sector plans to make sure that they are ready to face the changes, and building resilience and disaster risk measures, particularly in the coastal zone, recognizing the sea level rise, which we haven't talked about, is another indirect consequence of climate change.
Could you elaborate a bit more on some of the examples you've seen of how countries have evolved their initiatives to tackle climate change impacts in their respective territories?
For example, Peru has been leading the way in developing vulnerability assessments of the fisheries sector to climate change. Peru is one of the largest fishing nations and take a great deal of care in evaluating and assessing the impacts rapidly. A number of other countries, particularly in Africa, are focusing on the development of climate smart techniques to cope with climate change in fisheries. Kenya, Ghana, Mauritius, Madagascar are examples there. Small island development states are particularly focusing on sea level rise and measures to reduce the impacts of sea level rise. But in general, I would say that most countries are not yet ready to develop their adaptation strategies. It's a bit early for them. They have just recognized the role of the oceans and the importance of the oceans in food security and in their own livelihoods. And there are a number of measures that need to be taken. And this is what we are bringing, FAO is bringing to COP22, is a recognition for countries to realize that they need to adapt at four different levels in a coordinated manner. They have to adapt institutionally, and from a governance perspective, they have to adapt from a livelihoods perspective, supporting the communities that depend on the marine environment and the oceans, adapt markets and the value chain of products, and the reduction of risks to climate change. Those four elements need to be coordinated in the response. Otherwise, the ones can work against the other. And that's the message we'll bring to COP22 to help countries moving forward on this.
How are these issues expected to move forward after COP22?
I think they will move forward very rapidly because the narrative has changed from one that is based on trying to identify the problems to one that trying to identify the solutions. The action agenda is ready, and that action agenda will include a number of different elements. Along the four areas that I mentioned early on that countries need to adapt, we are pretty sure that countries are going to start developing cross-sectoral plans of action, trying to bring, for example, fisheries, tourism, extraction industries in the same narrative, in the same plan of adaptation. We need to make sure that all these plans are financially ambitious and they are supported by the banks that are capable of providing that ambition. For the oceans in particular, FAO proposes the Blue Growth Framework, which is a framework that tries to balance conservation and sustainable development. We cannot have measures that exclusively reduce the development of activities in the oceans. We have to manage the activities sustainably, conserving what needs to be conserved.